Do you like movies, comic books, science fiction, and more? Then you've come to the right place. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. You can find us at therebelradiopodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Welcome to the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long, the Tom Cruise hater.
Oh, come on, man. Thought you'd at least be an IMF agent today.
Oh. The IMF agent.
Dude, don't hate on Cruise, man.
You know what? What if he is an IMF agent?
He's made a lot of really good, entertaining films.
Yeah.
Man,
it's Tom Cruise under that face.
It's too trendy to hate on him, man. Everyone wants to hate on him. Be like me and Matt and embrace him. We always mention his birthday. We sung happy birthday to him once on the show. I mean, dude, embrace the Cruise, man.
And plus, if there's invisible flames
I thought we live in America. I thought we have the freedom to choose and speak the what
but don't
we
be
want.
But don't be a trendy millennial bitch. How about that?
I'm not a fucking millennial, boomer.
You know, but you're acting like a millennial. Without Cruise, we don't have this great franchise we have because he really is the one.
It's a Gen X trademark to hate on Cruise.
We will talk about it, but if Cruise did not get involved in this, this series was going to stay in developmental hell, you know, with Mel Gibson attached to it at one point and other actors, and it was never going to happen. So thankfully to Cruise, we got this incredible action franchise that's 25 years old, and we'll talk more about that. But so how was y'all's week besides Cruise hating? Long, you're out there working your ass off still.
It's the perpetual misery week in, week out.
So, sounds about right.
Like I'm on a carousel of dicks right now. It just keeps coming and coming around and hitting me in the face and shoving me up my butt.
So, Damn,
I hate it.
We're carousel in of some dicks. Ways we are seeing we're seeing the results of the consequences of 2020 in a lot of ways with all these companies with driver shortages, product shortages continues.
I want to hang myself.
Companies cutting hours to make up for the money they spent last year or they lost last year either way. So yeah, we're seeing the results of that. 2021 in some ways has been better, but only maybe by a small margin if you really think about it.
Yeah. You know?
Put a bullet through my skull.
That doesn't solve anything.
You got a collection of guns, right? Keeps me off the truck at least.
Man, I can't believe they make you. You're not allowed to say no. That's not my job. I mean,
I have no idea. I'm afraid of retaliation.
I would be like, fuck no.
They'll retaliate. Republic National Distribution Company managers will retaliate against me if I refuse to do someone else's job. I named my company. There you go.
So
I'm putting it out.
Let's move from that negativity there, and let's make fun of Matt. Matt, you had a little knee scope in there. You know, spending too much time on your knees at work.
Arthroscopic surgery. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's what happens when you spend a lot of time on your knees. The opposite of Long, who obviously doesn't kiss enough ass or suck enough dick. Matt's over there doing plenty of it for both of us in the point of that knee surgery. You know, man, every time one of us has some sort of medical thing, we're going to make fun of it. You know this. Whether Long's making fun of our ball sacks or something, it's going to happen. So, you know.
Yes. And, hopefully I never have to have butt surgery.
No. Well, wasn't that former
butt
host of the show?
Butt surgery is probably not that bad compared to anal.
Yeah.
former host of the show, Frank, remember he had that butt procedure. I'm pretty sure we rammed it pretty hard to him with that episode.
That's whenever we were all three coworkers and we were messing with him the whole time. He got pissed.
So, you know.
Stop it, man.
You have body cavity things occur to you, then, you know, that's what happens. Yep. So. But it is what it is. Hold on, I'm over
here. It is what it is, man. You got 6 weeks of therapy, and then if I want, they'll put me into some cool therapy machines where I'll learn how to, you know, run again.
You still have to work at night?
I still have to work at night, but I'm going to have, like, everything handed to me. They're like, oh, well, you know, you can just be stationary. We'll get people to help you out. So it's like, I'm going to have some assistance.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see.
The wife's giving you assistance, too, and taking care of you.
We hope. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And the kids, she's just like, screw you. She's like, screw you, man. I'm taking care of the kids. You're on your own.
For real. Jake made me breakfast this morning. He was like super proud. He's like, do you need anything? And I was like, thanks, man.
How old is Jake?
11.
How old is Joel, Jake?
11.
How do you get your 11-year-old to make breakfast? I got to talk to Michael about this crap and get him on some breakfast making.
It was the easy stuff. He threw a Jimmy Dean sandwich in the microwave and a waffle in the toaster, but I would take that.
I didn't get that on Father's Day or my birthday. I would take that. Take a Jimmy Dean sausage in the microwave. Damn, Jake needs to come over here and get Michael some lessons.
There we go.
At least I don't have to mow the yard this summer. It's great having a 12-year-old who can mow the yard. It's the best fucking
thing. That's true.
It's like, get out there and do it, boy.
I've been trying to teach Jake that.
I tried last year when he was 11. And he still needs some help. So next year, he'll be on it, dude. Once they hit 12, it's get out there and mow that fucking yard. But so let's get into the show then, man. Download this where we tell people what we watched, stream, checked out this week. Whoever wants to go first.
I'll go first.
Okay.
Just finished watching the fourth and final Evangelion movie on Amazon Prime. Evangelion 3.0 plus 1.0, Thrice Upon a Time. And man, this movie was a very good capstone that concluded basically 20 plus years of the Neon Genesis Evangelion franchise. And it was a pretty satisfying ending. Very cryptic, as usual, but in a way, visually stunning film, and has its philosophies and tackles depression and all that stuff, but very happy ending to a storied anime franchise. And then I play some more Final Fantasy 14.
Nice.
And I'm in the Stormblood expansion story, which is not as good as Heavensward, but I think I might have said that last week. That's how long the story is. So otherwise a pretty satisfying viewing, despite my daily hell of misery that is my work. Oh.
Man, I had some extra time, obviously, because my surgery was Wednesday. We're recording now. It's Saturday night. And I'm going to be honest. I have not seen all the MI movies. I hadn't. So I was like, you know what? I got some homework to do. Watched the movie we're talking about today. Went back and watched two. We covered two last year, I believe.
It was actually Long's first episode when he made his return to the show as a full-time member.
Oh, okay.
He came on and did MI2 with us, yeah.
Yeah, man. Watched,
wait a minute. I thought it was Frank's substitute this whole time.
No. You're no longer keeping the seat warm. It is your seat,
full-fledged, sir. Full-fledged.
Yes.
Oh, okay. That means I can take on some of Frank's characteristics, too.
Yes.
Well, you have, trust me. Shots fired. Bam.
Shots fired.
A quick tangent. Me and Matt, were you on Long? Was that an episode or was that a pre-show where me and Matt were like, you know, at some point we have to like kind of let him make a one episode return just to catch up and see how he's doing? I think Matt made a comment so he could go, oh, yeah, that's cool. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Maybe one day. It's not gonna be like an anniversary episode. It's just gonna be like a random like episode 278 or something. Just something random. Like, oh, Frank's coming on for an episode. We're not gonna give him any special fucking treatment. No anniversary. We'll do like a one-off comeback. He has actually mentioned, he goes, if y'all ever do Rad, you have to let me come on. And I said, and he really does like that movie. So anyway, so what else did you watch, man?
Rad.
So three, four,
five. You ever seen Rad from the 80s? Dude, yeah, it's man. Classic 80s BMX film.
BMX, man. Oh.
It's a good movie.
I saw Breakin'.
Yeah, Breakin'. It's in that same genre.
Yeah.
Rad's actually a very entertaining film. It's very 80s, but it's enjoyable.
Which is funny when you brought that up, slight tangent. Like, you know, Stranger Things, when they ride their mm-hmm. bikes. I remember growing up in the 80s, no one had those kind of freaking 70s bikes. We all wanted BMX bikes.
Right.
BMX freaking bikes. Not yeah. those stupid banana seat bikes in Stranger Things.
That's true.
Someone need to correct a record on this, because I know you and I, Mark, we grew up in that time period, and we never rode. We would be caught dead on those bikes, you know, that they're riding around.
And out of all those movies, a quick thing, and then we'll get back when we're watching. Rad was probably the best of those BMX movies that came out. And the story about it is it never had a Blu-ray release until about a year and a half ago. It was only on VHS. It became a very, very popular bootleg film. Never was hardly ever shown on cable, HBO, or any of that stuff in the 90s and 2000s. So it became kind of a cult classic, and Vinegar Syndrome got rights to it and put out a Blu-ray about a year and a half ago, which I bought, a very, very limited edition. Now Mill Creek has the rights to it. Mill Creek has been put out on Blu-ray. So it is available now, and it's available on Vudu. But for years, Rad was a cult classic you couldn't get anywhere. And so now it's made a little bit of a comeback with its Blu-ray and digital release. And out of all the BMX films, it is probably one of the better ones, if not the best. So, but anyway.
Yeah. I have to say, you know, I didn't realize how strong Tom was in the role of Ethan Hunt this whole time. I think he's still got it, man. And this last Mission Impossible movie was a nail biter. One of the most biggest nail biter moments. Yeah. It's real good. And I just like how they connect other parts of the franchise, mm-hmm. you know, well, I know we'll talk about that, in the next segment.
We're definitely going to talk a little bit about the history and everything in the series. And
And then the rest, a little bit of a list, Mallrats, Not Another Teen Movie, Austin Powers 2 and 3, Waterboy, Friday the 13th Part 4, because it was Friday the 13th yesterday, and I don't have all of them digitally. So I went ahead and bought the digital pack for $13 on Vudu yesterday, and HBO Max had one of my favorite horror movies, 13 Ghosts, on there. So I watched 13 Ghosts, and I watched the What If series on Disney, and I liked it. I liked the What If episode, the first one. It's very. It makes Carter look like Wonder Woman. And in some parts, but it's really cool how one thing changes the timeline, you know.
Well, I guess it's my turn, but we'll start with What If. I did watch a couple other things, but I really enjoyed What If too. And my thing about What If is I thought the retro-y but yet modern animation looked really cool. I found it pretty funny how critics were knocking this series really hard. Do they realize that you shouldn't take this too serious? That it's pretty much just enjoy it for what it is. I don't know why they were trying to compare it to Marvel. Critics were trying to compare it to Marvel films and Marvel continuity and all that. These are out of continuity, kind of just fun stories. You don't take them too seriously. I used to love the What If comics when I was a kid, and that's what I felt like watching it. It was like, oh, these are these stories, What If, on the screen. I think it's really cool. I do hope, as the series goes, since they already announced it's season 2, that it's not just What Ifs from the MCU. I would love to see them do stuff from the comics, you know?
Yeah.
So I hope they branch out a little bit, because it looks like the first season is all What Ifs from the MCU, and I hope they use this format to branch out further. But if they don't, I'll enjoy it for what it is. But it's fun, man. I mean, you know, solid animation, solid voice acting. Some of the original voice actors came back. Some didn't. You know, Chris Evans did not voice Steve in this episode, but yet Haley Atwell came back and did Carter, and Dominic Cooper came back and did Stark. So there were some actors that came back and did it. So that was cool. but it definitely a fun watch. I think next week's episode is what if T'Challa became Star-Lord instead? So that'll be interesting. So that should be fun. And we get our one last time we get to hear Chadwick Boseman voice the Black Panther. So that'll be cool. Yeah. But I watched that and got a little power flicker there. I also watched
kind of making me nervous.
Yeah.
Good old Houston. Hey, we have the reliable Texas power grid to keep us running, right?
I mean, if it happens, we'll record tomorrow night and do it all again or something. I don't know. I also watched Batman The Long Halloween Part 2, the conclusion of Part 1 that came out last month. And, man, I really enjoyed the heck out of this adaption. I've never read the books, but I really enjoyed the way they animated and adapted, and I think it was really good. It's a bit of a smarter Batman story, not just focused on action, more of a detective story as Batman and Gordon try to figure out who the holiday killer is, as he's killing crime bosses every holiday throughout the year. And really well done, man. Out of the new DCU universe stuff, since they rebooted it, this has been my favorite thing they've done so far. I really liked it a lot. So I highly recommend watching that. And I also sat down and watched 89 Batman this week because I was all excited. I texted Matt. They finally put the HBO Max app on my television, so I don't have to upload my PlayStation to watch it. So I'm cruising through it, and I wanted to watch Batman in Ultra HD. And it's still kind of weird watching those movies and those older films because, like, the frame rates aren't really made for Ultra HD. So sometimes, like, Batman will move really fast across the screen. So it is always weird to watch something that's pre, like, 2005-ish, you know, in Ultra HD. Sometimes it looks off. But the Batman 89 comic came out this week. And I did go to the comic book store today. I took the kids for free comic book day, and I picked up a copy of Batman 89. And I haven't read it yet, but I'll probably maybe tonight after we finish recording, I might sit down and read that issue. That's about what I watched this week. But I definitely recommend Batman The Long Halloween, checking that out. One of the better DC Universe animated entries as of late. And check out What If you haven't seen it yet. And I know, I need to get to Loki, hopefully soon. And as I get loud,
I heard that, Mark.
No, man, that's some loud thunder. Yeah.
For real.
Bear with us. Oh, it's here, like, it comes. You know, thunder on your end.
Very, very frightening.
Well, let's get into today's feature film and hope that we make it through this episode. And that is 1990s. We kind of alluded to it already. And if you follow us on our websites and social media, you already knew we were doing this movie. But that is 1996's Mission Impossible, starring Tom Cruise and directed by Brian De Palma, who basically admittedly did this film for a commercial hit and to for a paycheck. And De Palma, you know, of course, of Scarface fame, and was not on a series of hits at the moment, needed a hit. And so he made this movie, and somehow production got done because him and Tom Cruise really didn't get along at all. But they made it through the film and produced a pretty solid opening entry to this franchise. One that I had not watched. I did see this in theaters. I haven't seen this one in quite some time, and rewatching it, and I'm like, this is way better than I remember it. I used to think that it was kind of slow and kind of boring, but it's one of those movies, I guess, when you get a little bit older, you really appreciate it for what it is. It's honestly, out of all the Mission Impossible films, this is more spy thriller than the rest of them. They do start leaning more towards action and espionage than the rest of them. This definitely has a heavier spy feel to it. But it's got a great mystery surrounding the movie at the beginning. To summarize, Ethan Hunt is on a IMF team, the Impossible Mission Force. And the entire crew is wiped out, seemingly, and he has to figure out what's going on and survive as they try to protect a knock list, which is a list of agents and their identities of getting out into the open for terrorists to use against them. So Ethan has to go rogue and develop a team to basically try to steal the knock list back, in a sense, and sell it to the buyers to figure out who's behind it all. It's essentially the story of it. But it's a little more complicated towards that at the end as Ethan figures out there's a conspiracy behind it. And the whole thing was a setup to find a mole within the organization. They try to set him up. But Ethan figures out real quick that the mole was actually his former team leader. And it comes to a nice little conclusion and exciting train sequence in which Ethan Hunt saves the day for the first time and the world for the first time in the history of this franchise. that's basically the shit in a nutshell.
Yeah. And
did we just lose Matt?
I think so.
Well, we'll keep going and maybe he'll come back.
Yeah, Jean Reno was in this movie, and it was like one of his first movies after The Professional. Mm-hmm. And always thought he was a very remarkable actor. And also has some classic scenes, of course, the infiltration scene with the tight wire, wire. Yeah, and the freight train, as you were alluding to.
Yeah, the Langley heist is very exciting. It has like this intensity to it. Even though it's like there's no action, it's just like you're kind of nail biting the whole time. You're like, oh my god, sweat's falling from him. There's all this security on it, and it's really well shot.
Right. Yeah. And what else? And also, gosh, rewatching the movie, I've forgotten about the actress. She was really popular. At least she was an up and coming French actress. What was her name here again? Be here. And I had a crush on her too.
plays his teammate.
Yeah. And let me see. Let me catch her name again. Her name was it couldn't be Emmanuel Beard, was it?
That sounds right.
Yeah. Ah, she looks different now. Back then she was really beautiful.
Yeah.
It's 25 years ago. I was surprised that John Voight's character in this film was based on the original TV series character, right?
Yeah. He was named Phelps, just like in the original show, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, why they turned him evil? You know?
Well, yeah.
He wasn't.
Well, Martin Landau, you know, was in the original show. Originally, they wanted the whole original team to be in this movie where there was an opening sequence, and they all get wiped out. And Landau said, you know, we're not doing that. You know, all the team members agreed that was kind of a stupid idea. Why would we come in and get filmed just to get wiped out? And, you know, so it ended up being just the one actor from the original show even appearing in this movie. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, Voight's character is based on the original show and that idea of it, and so that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
are you back, Matt?
I'm back. Sorry, using
his hotspot.
I'm using my hotspot.
Is your power still out?
Well, it takes a while for that Wi-Fi to boot back up, so I was just trying to hop back on because it just blipped. So I know my hotspot's gonna or my Wi-Fi is gonna take a little bit. So I was like, I'm going to use my hotspot for
more. It's kind of fitting that we're rogue podcasting in some ways, doing a movie about rogue agents and special spies and stuff like that. So Matt, as you were out from it, we were just talking about, you know, the initial reaction to seeing this film and some of the exciting sequences like the Langley heist and the train scene and some of that, those thoughts.
Those are the two best scenes in the movie. Obviously. I mean, I think the only other one that's really cool is the restaurant scene whenever he's like, oh, you're the only agent left, you know, and so it's got to be you, you know, and then he uses the gum and throws it at the fish tank. That's a one shot sequence. So that all had to be done in one shot, and he does it
because they built that set. Yeah, they only had one set to explode. Yeah.
Yeah. I would probably say those are like the best three scenes in the entire film. Langley's probably one. The train scene's really good. I really like it, but I just like the suspense of the Langley scene probably best in the film. Yeah. But man, that train scene still holds up even with the, you know, 1996 graphics. I felt like, you know, it was still fun to watch. You know, I didn't see any issues with it, you know, like it.
Kind of sad that Jean Reno's character was a backstabber too.
Oh yeah,
yeah. John Reno. We were introduced to Luther in this movie. He's the only other actor to appear in all six films with Cruise. And Ving Rhames does a good job. And Brian De Palma cast him on purpose because he felt like he was the opposite of what a hacker looked like. You know, it wasn't like a nerdy kid. He was a bulky, you know, strong guy, you know, so he wanted something to go off cuff a little bit. Some other interesting notes is this movie, Cruise promised the studio, you know, the studio only wanted to spend $40 million at first. And Cruise was like, look, man, you know, we can do this. We can make it a hit. If you read the production notes on this, it seems like De Palma was just there to direct. It seemed like Cruise really guided the ship on this as far as ideas on sets and things like that. The idea of the Langley heist, the idea of the bullet train, that was all Cruise wanted all this done. And he convinced the studio to give him another $40 million, and he waived his salary for this film. He took some of the box office instead. He didn't waive his entire salary. He cut his salary in half. So Cruise basically only got paid about $8 million for this film plus box office. And he did that. He did that because he really believed in this franchise and wanted to get it working. You got to remember, this is Cruise coming off of his Born on the 4th of July Oscar nomination. He was starting to become Cruise was big at this point, but he wasn't quite the star he is now. Mission Impossible really made him even bigger. And, and he's honestly really good in this film. And that was the first thing I noticed watching this. Like, now when he plays Ethan Hunt, he's good, but it's natural to him. You know, it's kind of a walkthrough. But, like, in this thing, he really acts his ass off in this to feel, like, an intensity to the scenes, to feel that he's on edge the whole time. But yet he's also focused. Like, I love the scene whenever they put his mother and his uncle and pick him up for drugs, and he's like, do you really think that Martian Ball and Paul is going to really piss me off if I just killed my whole team? And he pulls it off really convincingly, you know. And I think that's the thing. I know you were teasing. You were at the beginning of the show. I don't know. Well, maybe you weren't teasing, but hating on Cruise. But, man, Cruise is honestly – he makes this movie work. He sells the film so much.
I will say that it seems like the first few films, he kind of has this intensity that he approaches this film with. And the last three, it's like visiting an old friend, you know, it's you know, business as usual, but still good. Like you said. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I will concede the fact that he was sufficient in this film.
Sufficient. I mean, this is the same year he also did Jerry Maguire too. So he had a couple of big hits this movie,
which I'm glad I haven't watched yet.
This movie, I mean, overall worldwide box office, this movie did $450 million. So it was a huge hit to kick off the franchise. And it's hard to believe that it took almost 5 years to get the sequel made. You know, Cruise kept fighting with to get the sequel made, and the studio just kind of wasn't really behind it completely. But it's also that time in which Cruise was going through the whole Katie Holmes thing. And I think things were a little bit, you know, awkward for him. And he was doing some other films, but he finally got the sequel made. And now and you think this franchise is 25 years old, we've only had six films. And like, well, there was some holdbacks between a couple of the films. It took them a while to get going. But at least we got them. And, I was reading that Mel Gibson was almost in this movie. There was a couple other actors that were real close to casting until Cruise came on board with his production company and convinced Paramount that they could do this film as a franchise. Because Paramount also didn't believe that it would work as a franchise. They thought that, the Bond was kind of, you know, this was the – what era was this? Pierce Brosnan era. Studios believed that, you know, people didn't want to watch spies unless they were Bond. But Cruise came on board, and his production company was able to convince him to get the film made. And sure enough, there is room for more than one spy franchise out there, you know?
Yeah. And it works here. It's like I think these movies are, man, just every bit as good as 007 movies. It's like you can put these up against the best.
Well, if you go back to the 25 years since this film came out in 96, you could put all six Mission Impossible films up against almost all the Bond films, and they're almost all just as good. The only ones that might even come close in the last 25 years would be Casino Royale and Skyfall. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, none of the Pierce, because GoldenEye was already out at this point, so you can't count it. None of the Pierce Brosnan films come close to this. You know, Quantum of Solace and Spectre don't come close to this. You know, so really only two Bond films in the last 25 years have been close to this. And this has been a solid franchise. And You know, we covered two a couple years ago, and I know I like it because I'm a John Woo fan, and it took a lot of flack. And Woo has talked about before how the studio kind of cut the film some, and it's definitely. I agree. I like two, but I also agree that two is the least Mission Impossible like film of the whole franchise. And then three kind of brings it back in the direction of, you know, spy action as he's trying to stop a Philip Seymour Hoffman's character from unleashing hell in the world. And then Brad Bird brought it back to the kind of beginnings with Ghost Protocol. And then, of course, Chris McQuarrie has come in for the last two. And, man, Rogue Nation and Fallout back-to-back are just really fucking good movies, you know?
Oh, yeah. And they piggyback off of each other, too.
Yeah.
It's like Rogue Nation Part 1 and 2. You know?
Yeah, they're definitely the first two films of the franchise to be true sequels. I mean, there's always threads throughout the films that call back to the other ones, but Rogue Nation and Fallout were the first true sequels they did to each other. And mm-hmm. and I think that gave them something to work with on those two. And I think 7 and 8 will probably be similar. I have a feeling they'll kind of play off the other two all as well. You know, are you caught up on this franchise long? Have you seen all of them?
I've seen Ghost Protocol. Let's see. I've watched Mission 1 and 2. Watched Ghost Protocol and then the last movie.
Yeah. Okay. And 3 is the J.J. Abrams one. You know.
Yeah.
And sometimes I have to sit back and think, one. Oh yeah, J.J. Abrams directed a Mission Impossible film. You know, yeah. It's like.
I mean, I know Philip Seymour Hoffman was really good in that one.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. No, it is a good movie. Yeah, but overall, though, man, looking back on this franchise, you know, I think it's been very successful, and it's been very fun to watch. I look forward to these when they come out. I thought Fallout was great. And then going back and watching this first one, man, I'm like, I'm just like, wow, this is way better than I remember it being. I really enjoyed watching it. It's got an intensity to it. I've always liked spy thrillers and things like this. And man, I think this holds up really well. Like Matt said, even the special effects and the train sequence and I give it a pretty solid A, man. I think this movie's still pretty good.
I have to agree. It's an A.
Yes, it's a nominal spy thriller.
There's some and spy. The spy genre is something that, like I said, I'm glad they made this because there can be a competitor to Bond. But you know, I think it's a genre that there's still a lot to do in this with Hollywood. I think I'd like to see more directors take shots. You ever seen a movie called Spy Games or Spy Game with Robert Redford and Brad Pitt?
No,
I don't think so. It might be on Netflix. Man, if you're looking for a really good spy thriller that will surprise you, man, check that out. It's actually really well done. Very good movie. And so if you're looking for something this genre that hasn't been seen or heard, you know, that's a good movie. So, you know, Mission Impossible franchise is known for Tom Cruise and doing his own stunts. Which he did in this movie too, which saved the studio some money because they didn't have to pay a stuntman, and some pretty remarkable action sequences over the years. So we thought we'd take a look back at the top five and some of these action sequences that in the Mission Impossible films. And I guess I can go first. I didn't go first lately, huh?
Yeah.
At number five, I have the bike chase from Mission Impossible 2. At the end of the film, where they. Ethan Hunt jumps on the bike to chase down the Chimera virus before it gets out in the open. And Doug Ray Scott pissed off because he didn't get to play Wolverine. And Tom Cruise has to kick his ass on the beach and save the world. And it's the most Woo-like sequence in the entire film. And I think that's why it is so freaking awesome, because it's John Woo doing what he does best. And that's directing a remarkable action sequence on the bikes.
That's a good one.
My number five is the high wire infiltration scene. It's not flashy, but it's a really good story. Tension adds a lot of tension.
Drives the plot stakes. Very well. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, my number five.
My number five is from Mission Impossible 3, the Vatican extraction.
Cause he never goes last.
No. the Mission Impossible 3 Vatican extraction scene. I just think that whole sequence is awesome, where he's got to loop the cameras, and then he's got to go in and he's got to replace Philip Seymour Hoffman and then drop him down the tunnel, blow up the Lamborghini. That whole sequence is just, you know, they almost get caught. It's very suspenseful. Very good.
Yeah. At number four, I am also in the same movie, Mission Impossible 3, but I have the bridge ambush scene where Philip Seymour Hoffman's guys basically come to his aid and take him out of the IMF force's hands and try to get him back. And it's a exciting sequence, and one in which Ethan Hunt doesn't get defeated very often in these movies. But in the ambush scene, he has that look on his face of defeat, and you're like thinking, how's he going to get out of this? You know? Yeah. And it's a really well-shot scene. One of J.J. Abrams' better action scenes I think he's ever shot, to be honest. And we're talking about a guy who's done the Star Trek movies and Star Wars movies, but that bridge ambush is awesome.
Yeah, it's good.
Number four for me is the rock climbing sequence in part two. That was very realistic to me, and I know Tom climbed that height. Without a rope.
Well, he had a harness on some of it.
Yeah.
Only because the studio would not allow him to. Yeah, the studio would not allow him to do it without a harness. They even told him, nope, you're wearing a harness. Insurance money, baby.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Number four for me, it's the Rogue Nation Opera House scene. I just like when I forget the actor's name. Crap. You know, the hacker, Scotty.
Simon Pegg.
He keeps like getting frustrated and he's hitting the machine and it keeps making Tom Cruise's, go up or down. And it's like in very inconvenient situations.
He's trying to fight the guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's multiple shooters and, cool action scene.
At number three, I have from Ghost Protocol the scaling of the hotel, man, as he has to go up to the server room to try to hack the server room on the side of the tallest building in the world, which they really shot at that hotel in Dubai. And he's scaling the building, and he has to jump off with the fire hose around his waist and try to make it back down. It's just like, when you see this on the big screen, it's like if you're afraid of heights. It felt really realistic. Being up that high, like you're right there with Tom Cruise and doing that. And it's an exciting sequence. One of the best in Ghost Protocol.
My number three is the helicopter chase scene in Rogue Nation. I've never seen the helicopter chase scene before.
What's in Fallout?
Fallout. Okay. Fallout. Thank you. But I've never seen it captured on film like that before. Number three, the helicopter chase scene.
Yeah, mine is basically right after that long. The Kashmir climax in Fallout where they're fighting, where Tom Cruise is fighting Superman on the mountain, and he's trying to get the pin out of the detonator. And it's like, I almost thought that he didn't get the pin out in time, but he does. And it's like, man, you know, just... really suspenseful and a good fight scene.
Yeah.
At number two, I have the opening sequence of Rogue Nation where Ethan Hunt, Tom Cruise is hanging from the side of the plane. And again, some humor from Simon Pegg's character going, Benji's his character's name. He's like, he's on the plane. And they're like, what do you mean he's on the plane? And Benji's like, he's on the plane. You know, and it's like he's hanging from the side of it. And,
he's like, where are you that in was the plane? Not in the plane.
He's on the plane. And just a cool sequence, man. And that's the thing about these movies, and we're not even done in our top five yet. It's just like, man, Tom brings it when it comes to the action in these films. And that was a cool sequence.
He really hung from that plane.
Yeah.
He had a harness on, but he rode on the outside of a plane.
Yeah.
My number two is the motorcycle chase scene from Fallout.
Streets of Paris.
Paris.
That's a good one.
And it has some really cool close-up shots and wide shots, and just to remind you that it's him that's riding the bike in real time, and I appreciate definitely how the recent movies don't really cheat with the quick cuts and all the, you know, shaky cam stuff. Like,
yeah,
I can't stand
Chris McQuarrie definitely can shoot action very well.
Yeah.
For me, number two, I've got the Langley heist in this film. I just think it was just so suspenseful and nail biting, and just, you know, from not even, you know, going to not even letting your sweat hit the ground, the freaking rat that's fucking shit up, you know, and you're just like, oh my God, you know, what's going to happen? Like the suspenseful films or,
you know, I like shots. Like the rat sequence. I feel like some of those things like that is Tom put that in the film. Cause like, I don't see Brian De Palma doing silly stuff like that. You know, yeah. He's always been a real serious director. And I think Cruz helped make the movie have a little bit of humor in it.
Yeah.
You know, cause I really feel like Brian De Palma would not have done that. He would have kept it really serious but it makes for the movie to be kind of fun and not overly serious, you know, to have something like that.
Yeah, he definitely didn't incorporate any of that in Untouchables or Scarface. So
or Snake Eyes. Yeah, he's always a real serious director.
Yeah.
At number one, man, I have the most recent film, Fallout, and it's a helicopter chase. And man, I am seeing when I saw this in theaters just a couple years ago was when this last one came out, and that scene, you know, blew me away. Man, it's hard to get overly excited about action sequences. Because we've seen so much, man. We're not – nothing surprises anymore, but the helicopter chase truly thrilled me as a moviegoer and as a fan of film is how exciting that was. I mean, I'm like you, Long. I'd never seen two helicopters chasing each other, almost playing chicken with each other, trying to knock each other out of the sky. It was fucking awesome, you know. And it's like you think, how do you top that in 7 or 8? And you think about these action sequences we just talked about. Well, you leave it up to Chris McQuarrie and Tom Cruise to come up with something, because I'm sure there's going to be something spectacular.
Yeah.
Faux show.
My number one is the Burj Khalifa climbing scene in Ghost Protocol.
I'm glad you wrote down the name of the hotel, because I could not. Yeah. I just called it hotel.
Yeah. 163 floors, baby.
Yeah. Now the second tallest building in the world, no longer the first.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. But the reason why I like that secret so much is that I hate heights, especially when I'm watching. I mean, I don't mind seeing heights personally, but sometimes I see those YouTube videos of idiots doing first-person perspectives of heights, and they're going along with they're hanging out around the overhang, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's freaking scary. And they're going out without a harness, especially, you know. And I'm like, okay, whatever, Darwin Awards. But anyways, Tom Cruise doing that stunt on the Burj Khalifa is pretty harrowing.
Yeah,
and that makes me hate heights. I'm not I don't usually hate heights.
I don't like heights.
Yeah, I don't mind heights, but that makes me hate heights. So, what's your number one, Matt? Drum roll.
Same as you. Burj Khalifa, man.
Oh, yeah.
Same one. I just think it's and Tom climbed some of that himself, which the public is not allowed to climb it, but Tom was able to climb some of that as he likes to do. He likes to do his own stunts. He loves climbing.
I'm sure he made a donation to the hotel.
Probably. He's like, sorry for getting my hand prints and my feet all over your, you know, and the sweat from my hair all over your glass. but that's definitely an exhilarating shot if you are height sensitive, for mm-hmm. sure. Just a great scene.
Yeah. Well, we didn't even talk about the sandstorm sequence that happens right after it. An awesome scene. And some of that was actually shot. Like, there was a sandstorm that blew in, so they used some real footage, but then they decided to incorporate it into the film. And that's an incredible sequence, too. Dubai is they've really opened up their arms to Hollywood, and there's been quite a few films shot there over the last few years as they've welcomed Hollywood to come in and use their remarkable structures and buildings to shoot movies. I think even one of the Fast and the Furious movies, some of it was shot there, in one of those buildings, yeah. And there's been a few other films that have been shot there. So it's cool to use that stuff. But good top five. We all had kind of different answers, a couple of sames. Good stuff. We thought about ranking the Mission Impossible films, but I was like, yeah, let's talk about their action sequences. That's one thing this franchise has done great over 25 years is given us some really good action sequences and just extremely entertaining movies. And even if you hate on Tom Cruise, man, this has been one of the best franchises of the last 25 years. You can't deny that. You know, when you walk in the theater, watch a Mission Impossible film, you're going to be thoroughly entertained and walk out of there pretty satisfied. Out of all six of them, I've never walked out of one that I really was like, oh, that sucked. You know, or sometimes you walk into a Bond film and like Spectre and you walk out very disappointed after Skyfall. You're like, that's what I get after Skyfall. Ugh. But I mean, not that Spectre was bad, but it was, I think the expectations for it were way higher after Skyfall being so good, you know? Yeah. And it was just kind of disappointing. And I have never gotten that with a Mission Impossible film. So yeah, I think that's more than fair to say. But I'm still looking forward to No Time to Die if it ever fucking comes out.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Hopefully we get that.
Yeah. By the end of this year. I don't know.
Yeah, there's already getting pushed into 2022. Yeah,
they're already starting that again, talking about pushing movies back and stuff. And so we'll just see.
Release theater at home. You know.
Yeah. Well, you see, we can get into some news.
Yeah.
You know, like Shang-Chi, you know, is tracking to not do that well at the box office. And a lot of it is because of the Delta variant and COVID hitting again. And Disney is saying they're not going to release it on movie at home. But I'd be willing to bet that changes the next couple of weeks. What do you guys think? I would not be surprised at all if Shang-Chi goes direct to Disney premiere also. Because if you believe the returns, Black Widow had an $80 million opening weekend, and it's believed that it made, you know, almost twice that at home. You know, rumor is $160, $200 million at home. And Disney's not just going to sit there and see that money and not push Shang-Chi out for home premiere if they know they can make that money back, you know?
Exactly.
So
if there's money to be made, they'll do it.
Yeah, I think so. And it's a shame because I'm actually really looking forward to Shang-Chi. I think it looks really exciting.
Yeah.
I've always kind of liked the Marvel movies that weren't your standard superheroes, you know, and so it looks good. I'm excited for it. So we'll see.
I see this Disney trying to repress the Asian population.
Speak
time and time again.
Preach to us, Long. Preach.
Preach.
But no, I mean, in some ways, though, you know, Long is right, man. Here's a big superhero film with an amazing Asian cast, and it's a shame that it's got to come out in this environment when it could be held back from being as successful as it can be, you know, because it looks great, you know, and the Marvel's track record is great. I mean, why isn't – there's no reason to think it's not going to be a good film, you know, I mean, with the track record Marvel's been on. So it deserves better. I do agree with Long on that. It deserves a better presentation and to be seen. So we'll see
what happens. And this is the next phase. It's like, you know, people are itching for more Marvel. Give it to them.
Yeah. You know? People want nothing more than to escape right now in the world, you know, and so they need that stuff.
Yeah, I want to escape right now. Not from y'all, but I'm talking about, you know.
Tim Drake made an announcement in this week's issue of Batman. He's bisexual. And, you know, this is something that's happening all the time now in the current woke culture. But this is big news because this is probably the most significant major superhero that's done this. You know, so far, Marvel and DC have both had characters that have came out as gay or lesbian or bisexual, but they've mostly been minor characters. So Tim Drake has been the first really big character. And so that's why it's big news. And, you know, it's just one of those things that I think if it's written well and it serves the story, then so be it. You know, it's not like you're going to open up an issue of a DC comic and see Tim Drake in a glory hole. You know, I think that's the first thing people think when they hear this stuff, like, oh, you're sexualizing comics. Not necessarily. You know, if it serves the story, then it is what it is. But, you know, DC editors felt it was okay to do it. It's the story they're telling. But, you know, their idea is to sell books and to reach new readers. And, you know, if it brings new readers in the comic store, and it you know, that's our job. So, did y'all see the prices on the Star Wars Resort? Matt, you might as well sell a couple.
$5,000 a day?
Yeah, you might as well sell a couple of those kids, Matt, if you ever want to go. Almost four. The prices start at $4,000 anywhere to $5,500 for one day at the Star Wars Resort. Now, apparently, you get a full Star Wars experience, but what does that mean? If I'm paying $4,000, I better get a real fucking lightsaber. You know? Yeah.
You want Leia chained to you while you say, yes. Oh, ho, ho, Han Solo.
Are you talking about corpse? I would imagine, though, there's got to be something in that package. It's got to include your Disney tickets. It's got to include, I mean, for that price.
Room, yeah, you know.
Yeah, all-inclusive food.
Steak. God.
Yeah, unbelievable. I saw that. I'm like, well, that's one thing I'll never do. But
for real.
Unbelievable. So, I don't know. We'll save our pennies. Yeah. Superman the Animated Series is going to be finally released on Blu-ray this fall for its 25th anniversary. Definitely one of the best incarnations of Superman on television told. And it's hard to get excited for Blu-ray releases because everything's streaming now. You can watch all that on HBO Max. But I think it's still pretty cool that this is the one of the DC Animated Series that still has not had a Blu-ray release. So it's finally getting one. And even though I have HBO Max, I might pick up a copy of it just so it can go with my Batman sets. And it is one of the best Supermans ever made. Really good show. And then lastly, Idris Elba is going to voice Knuckles in the Sonic the Hedgehog sequel.
Nice.
He had some fun with it by releasing a picture of the hand of Knuckles in his Twitter account. And so it seems like he's excited to do it, you know. And so I think that's kind of cool. But yeah, first Sonic movie was a lot of fun. So, you know, the kids really enjoyed it and I enjoyed it. So, you know. It's funny, you know, we've talked before about favorite video game adaptions, and I started thinking, the kids were actually watching Sonic the other day. You know, it could be the best video game movie made. It really could.
Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. I mean, it does everything that it should do for adapting the game, and it's really entertaining.
And they listened to fans when they animated Sonic.
Yes. It might be the best animated movie, and it's not even talked about that much in those kind of conversations.
Yeah.
Or animated video game movie. But it is very well done. Yeah, that's all the news I got. No new trailers this week. Not much really else going on as far as, I don't even really see any casting news this week other than Idris Elba. That's okay. Kind of a slower week. Before we get out of here then, let's preview next week's film. And, we're going to have, it's going to be fun, but you know, He-Man's in the news a lot right now with the Masters of the Universe Revelation television show, which is caused all kinds of controversy for some reason because these fanboys think they're entitled, but you know, it was a fun show. This was one that I guess we could have done this on Patreon because it's not a great film, but we don't have Patreon anymore. But it's a nostalgic trip film.
This is a middle finger to all you overprivileged fanboys. That's what it is.
This is the original 1980, is it 87 or 88? I don't remember what year it came out. Yeah. The Dolph Lundgren starring Masters of the Universe.
At the far end of the universe, there is a planet ruled by a being of utter evil. And there is only one man who dares challenge him. They are locked in a battle to the death. A battle that will take them across the heavens.
Stop him!
A battle that will finally be fought.
I want them hunted down and brought to me!
Across the face.
Police! Nobody move!
Of Earth.
I think I'm gonna need some backup.
Can you show us the way?
Of course!
No! Somebody help me!
From a distant galaxy, they have come to Earth. Dolph Lundgren as He-Man, Frank Langella as Skeletor. Only they have the powers to be. Masters of the Universe. Live the adventure.
This will be fun to talk about. I enjoy this movie just for silly reasons. I know it's not great, but there's a nostalgic thing about it. Dolph works his ass off to do a good He-Man. Frank Langella's great as Skeletor, and he calls it his favorite role he ever took. He loves talking about it.
Yeah.
I believe it's on Amazon Prime or Netflix, so it should be easy to walk around to watch with us next week. But it'll be fun, man. I'm going to shout the whole time that why are they on Earth? Because it's not Eternia. A young Courtney Cox in this film too. There's a lot of stuff to enjoy in this movie. There's also a lot of stuff to pick apart, but we'll try to make the best of it.
And there's a cool ass sword in the movie, man.
There's cool swords, and that's the thing. Yeah. The production of the movie's fine. So it'll be fun to watch next week on the show. As we talk Master of the Universe. But that's all we got this week, though. Just continue to stay safe out there and watch out for your fellow man. And go to TheRebelRadioPodcast.com and check our site for all our episodes. Our Comppalooza audio is up there now playing. I put that out last week if you want to hear our live show from Comppalooza. And I should not say just look out for your fellow man. I should say man and woman. Got to be politically correct nowadays. But anyway, Matt, keep healing that leg so you can get back down those knees at work soon enough. And until next week, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long, the IMF agent.
Yes. Much better. Much better.
Yes.
Until next week, as always, just go there and do it.